This podcast is brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Keep Joy on air by becoming a member, a subscriber, or donate. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.
Saturday Magazine, sponsored by Velocity Rewards,
the award-winning loyalty program for Virgin Australia's frequent flyers.
A unique mix of world news and queer culture. Saturday Magazine, every Saturday, 10 till 12, on Joy 94.9.
Saturday Magazine, Joy 94.9. Macca and Mark Hawthorne. Our guest is Graham Ashton, Chief Commissioner, Victoria Police. Welcome, Graham. I know you're a busy man. Surprised you'd get a spot with all the police cars in the street.
Yeah, I had to use the bumper bar and back a few out and push a few in to find a spot, Macca. But no, we're right. We got there.
Today, we wanted to talk about the, it's past, but the 20th anniversary of liaison between the LGBTIQ community and Victoria Police. Another anniversary, it's the 21st anniversary yesterday of Silk Miller.
Oh, yes, that's right.
A colleague of yours has reminded me of that. And he actually says, Graham is a big supporter of ensuring we remember our past so that it helps us shape our future. He's a decent man. I can't tell you who it is, but...
Well, it'd be... Yeah, I don't know who that might be, but this sounds like a nice person.
Yeah. So, look, 20 years on, Graham. A few years before that was the Tasty Raid.
Five years before that.
And, you know, that was a pretty horrific event for all the people involved. It was, I think it's fair to say, it was a defining issue for Victoria Police.
Yeah, it was a real sort of turning point for us in making sure that we have the right approach in our engagement with community, right across community, but in that case particularly LGBTI community, that we really needed to get better at that and also significantly recognise the issues that sometimes are quite unique issues that community faces.
Because we saw, you know, as a result of that, you know, there's been a lot of culture change in Victoria Police. There's gay and liaison officers. You know, you've had a number of inquiries into the culture of Victoria Police. You know, you've led a lot of this. How, 20 years on, you know, and I know that, you know, there are a number of incidents that have occurred in recent years that have caused some concern and some distrust. And I wanted to ask, can you give us an update on the IBAC inquiry into the hares and hyenas matter, or is that still happening?
It's still happening, Macca. Because it's an independent investigation, I'm not across where it's at. It's being done by IBAC.
Yep.
We've been sort of cooperating with IBAC right along the way as to everything that they've needed to do that. I imagine it's not far off because... I know, you know, interviews were done with our people a little while ago, so that, I think that it's probably not far away from being finished, but I don't actually have a date when we'll be hearing from IBAC.
Well, we await that with interest. Mm. But it goes again to, you know, the whole reason the... Was it Portfolio Reference Group or Police Reference Group that it was called?
I think initially it was a Police Reference Group when it first started 20 years ago.
And who was the commissioner then, Mark? Do you remember?
That'd be Neil Comrie.
Neil Comrie?
Yeah, it was Neil.
And, you know, I remember I attended some of those meetings and it was quite interesting that, you know, convincing people that there was a real need for this, that we did have some different dynamics to other communities and understanding that, you know, police officers are in a unique position. You know, they have to enforce the law, but also in a lot of cases they interpret the law in terms of their response and how, you know, they need to balance that. What's been the biggest challenge with changing the culture, Graham? What's the most challenging part?
I think for me the biggest change has been to make sure in training police officers and in the messages we give them is that we don't live in one huge homogenous community. And often the training that was provided years ago was really predicated on that, you know, a member of community, we're all the same and all had the same needs. Yeah. And that's not nowhere near the case. And we came to learn over that time, and as you mentioned, some of those incidents in LGBTI community as well, that there are unique elements to communities that affect policing and the way we police. And whether it's in the Indigenous community, whether it's dealing with gender and gender equality in the community. There are a number of elements that we need to understand are really quite special and have to be treated uniquely. So the training we've been giving police over the years has really been started to be contextualised to understanding those differences in the community, and the policing model has to change and adapt to those different communities.
I just want to come back to that SMS Macca started with, that you're a person who appreciates history, where you've come from, to know where you're going. That tasty incident, 1994, was front page of my old newspaper. I remember the picture, hands against the wall, very dramatic black and white photo. You would have been on the force at that time. Can you remember that incident happening, your reaction, where you were?
I wasn't in Victoria Police at that time. I was in another police force, but I certainly remember it because I remember I was in Melbourne at that time, and I remember it being in the papers and being talked about by police at the time.
Do you remember your reaction to seeing it?
I remember reading it fairly intently. I've got some friends in the LGBTI community, and so I guess from reading it from that, I sort of had that in mind, how are they going, how are they feeling, and some of those people I worked with at that time. So it was a case of, I think I was more thinking how they might be feeling and, talking to them as to how they were travelling and what they thought about it. I think that was my main thought at the time.
So now when you look at where the force is at, and obviously a lot of progress has been made, are you happy with where we're at, or do you think more still needs to be done?
Well, it's always a case of more needing to be done, because it's never I don't think anything policing ever should stagnate. We should always be looking at how we're going to be doing things better across the board. So this is no exception to that. But we have made enormous strides since those days. I'm very confident about that. Just the last few weeks, we've been sort of doing a lot of work to sort of make sure we recognise this week coming, sort of to do some 20th anniversary initiatives. And just again, just sitting down with members of the force that have been around a long time, that are themselves members of that community, hearing some of their experiences fresh again about the way that they were treated in the force again, and then just thinking culturally where we're at now to where we were then, even internally. We've come a long way, let alone how we've been interacting with the community. Again, we've still got a way to go, but we have come an enormous way too.
I think, when you look at, I'm not gonna name them, but there's a number of members of Force Command that are members of our community, and they've got those roles on merit, and it's been a tough road for them. When the reference group started meeting, I remember one of the issues that was really controversial was the definition of public sex.
Oh, yes.
And I remember a particular officer saying to me, but, why do you guys want to have, sex in parks and places like that? And I explained to him that it was as a result of venues often being closed down and the relationship between the police and my community and why it was always furtive. And, this discussion went on for ages about what constitutes public sex. And it was really difficult, to convince this officer that, the law needs to be interpreted in the right way, and because so much entrapment took place. Now, I know that, the law has changed in that area and the enforcement around that area, but that was one of the challenges. But it was also convincing a number of senior police that they did need to engage with my community, and even the appointment of the first gay and lesbian liaison officer, Melinda Edwards, and the process that took. Melinda subsequently went, I think she went to the Northern Territory Police.
Yes.
She was a real trailblazer. But you'd have to feel proud of where it's come, where you've come in Victoria Police. But is it fair to say you're not happy with where it is still? Because we've seen Human Rights and Equal Opportunity Commission, a report that you guys commissioned and you actually made public on the situation of members of our community in Victoria Police. We know, that self-harm amongst all emergency services workers is at an unacceptable level, but particularly in my community, we're well overrepresented. So there's still a lot of work to do, isn't there, Graeme?
Yeah, that's right. You're spot on. It's everything you've said, I agree with. We've still got a long way to go, and I don't think you can be... I think the work we got from Verioc in their report showed, again, like we've been saying, we've been making some really good progress, but you can't still be happy that where we need to be. We've still got a lot more to do. The recommendations really point that out too. So we've really got to be slavish in making sure that we follow those recommendations. And then also, you know, we're continuing to work with Verioc. We haven't sort of... I know now we're sort of on our own in that way, but we still, they're still, you know, an organisation we regard as critical friends in making sure that we get to where we need to get to. I think to your earlier point as well, we probably, I think part of it was understanding the journey that can go on in the life of someone that is from community. So, you know, even understanding that at an early age, many people feel this sort of pressure to conform to what is what was seen as community norm at the time and live a concealed life, because they really feared what might happen to them and around their families, about as they became aware of really of who they were as an individual, and really understanding that, I think, was something that wasn't something that police did. They didn't understand that. So they'd see a secretive meeting as being something clandestine and something hidden, you know, whereas that was really just part of the struggle of someone that was looking to try to understand who they were and understand how they might break out of those that sort of framework the community had placed them in, the broader community had placed them in.
So we're 20 years now, and you've spoken about the past. In the next week or two, are there some initiatives? Are there some announcements from the police?
Yeah, we have. Our clever people at our media unit are saying, don't talk about any of them. Don't tell any. It's a surprise and all this sort of stuff. But anyway, but yeah, we have got...
it's all right, media unit. Don't worry. No one's listening.
Yeah, but we have got a few things planned for this week that we've been working on in our Priority Communities Division, in which our GLOWs operate from, and the portfolio reference group as well. So they've been sort of working on some of that, and I've been part of helping to shape that as well. So we should be able, hopefully, if we get some coverage, get some good coverage this week.
We'll look forward to that. I want to ask you a bit of a left field question, Graeme. What's happening in Hong Kong? A lot of the discussion is about the level of force and the level of direction that the police there are getting. Now, they operate in a very different system. You know, Victoria, the police are accountable. You know, you're accountable to the minister and to the parliament. You're totally independent. How do you balance, you know, this, you know, the police want to maintain law and order in Hong Kong, but I'm going to put it, there's a political element to this, a real political element. Do you have any thoughts, or how do you manage that in Victoria? Yeah. I mean, you know, how do you manage it, and do you have any thoughts on Hong Kong?
Well, it's not really a domestic issue for us, because we do have an excellent separation in that context. Mm-hmm. And that's something that we work hard to preserve. And thankfully, we have a government that observes that as well. So it's not such a domestic issue. But certainly law and crime, particularly organised crime, doesn't know borders. And so it's very much an international thing that we have to work with. And so we engage through the federal police and through our own relationships with international law enforcement agencies around the world, because the criminals are travelling all around the world, and a lot of them just operate out, sometimes you think, out of airport lounges. They travel so much. So, you know, they're just on their phones and iPads and operating like that. And certainly Hong Kong is certainly a financial centre in the global context. We have always had a strong relationship with the Hong Kong police, and so as the criminal organised crime investigation side of thing goes. They have a good reputation internationally as being a very sort of well-educated professional force. A lot of their officer education is not only based in Hong Kong, but in Europe as well, Western Europe and the UK. I think what they'll be trying to focus on just within the policing context is around the public safety elements, making sure that people aren't getting caught up or injured and this sort of stuff. At the same time, trying to make sure that people are allowed to protest and can exercise their right to protest. But it happens in Hong Kong in a very complex environment.
It does.
Where you've got a much broader element that has an interest in how all that goes, and that would place the police under tremendous pressure.
I bet you don't envy your counterpart in Hong Kong.
No, in fact, I haven't met this police commissioner. I've met the last several, but I haven't yet met this police commissioner, and they've all been pretty decent sort of professional people. They certainly would be feeling a lot of pressure, I would think, from... it's a force that engages a lot with the community locally in Hong Kong. So, you know, all those relationships would be just under such tremendous stress at the moment.
That's one way to put it. They're engaging.
Yeah, as far as the demonstrators go.
I imagine the diary of the current incumbent in Hong Kong's a bit full if you're after a meeting at the moment.
Yeah.
The force said goodbye to one of the greats, a man who I think was referred to as the gold standard of policing, Mick Miller, a man I believe you referred to as Mr. Miller in all of your relationships or your time with him. Can you tell us a little bit about his legacy to the force?
Yeah, you're well informed, Mark. Yes, he is someone that was the gold standard in my view. He's epitomised everything a good police officer should aim to be in character and in behaviours. I know I did have a fortunate to get to know him quite well just over recent years particularly, and I always someone I could go to and have a cup of tea with, and he would give me advice about various matters. And
did you still call him Mr. Miller?
I did.
And what did he call you?
He'd call me Chief Commissioner, even in his kitchen having a cup of tea. But in fact, the only time he called me Graham was our very last meeting in the hospice. Other than that, it was always Chief Commissioner.
Yeah.
Because he felt that the office of Chief Commissioner was one of great importance to the state and one in which you've got to have a dignity to, and he was always observant of that, which I appreciated.
Look, we've run out of time. Your term, you've actually said you're not renewing your term.
I've got a 5-year. I signed a 5-year term, yep. And it comes up in next June.
Yeah.
So this is my last.
So what do you want
months.
To achieve before then, particularly with regard to the LGBTI community? I know this is a really difficult gig. You know, you're making yourself available. You know, you've talked about issues that are uncomfortable for the police. But what do you want to achieve before next June? You know, for my community, what do you want to? You know, what would you like to be able to hang your hat on?
Well, I don't think by next June I'll be able to have got those recommendations, particularly from the VIOC report, into a completed state. But I must be certain that by next June that we're well on that path. And that's something that I'm dedicated to making sure that we do. I think the work that we've done in Priority Communities Division has been really first rate over recent times. And I want to try and make sure that has a more sustainable momentum to it. Before I finish, mm-hmm. because for me, the Priority Communities Division is doing outstanding work in understanding what I talked about before, which was what are the particular needs of communities and how do we shape policing policy and, you know, in service delivery to make sure we observe that. So I've got to make sure that that is really strong, well-informed mm-hmm. and sustainable. That's something I'd like to try and achieve before then.
That's an admirable goal.
Saturday Magazine on Joy 94.9, proudly sponsored by Virgin Australia. Visit virginaustralia.com.
Thanks for listening to another Joy podcast brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Help us keep Joy on air. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.